Thank you, Michael. Will you please pray with me? May the words of my mouth and meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord. For you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Wherever I have lived, I have had a garden. Gardening is a way for me to relax, express creativity, and escape, well, from the stress of life. Now, early on, gardening was a challenge. When I was in seminary, Wendy and I lived in a small apartment on campus. There was no ground to plow. But God always provides, and mysteriously, as if from out of nowhere, Wendy would find green beans growing in her houseplants. We were newly married. She did not know of God's mysterious ways. What's that growing, and how did it get there? I'd respond, wow, let's just see what grows. Didn't take her long, however. She's a quick study to figure out someone had been planting. I wonder who that was, yeah. Having lived in Kentucky and Texas and Florida and now Arizona, each particular area have plants that are easy to grow and plants that are hard to grow. Each had the time of year to plant as well, too. It's hard not to be good at planting tomatoes in Kentucky. I mean, you stick it in the ground and it grows. But the growing season was short. In Florida, we'd get an inch or two of rain, and 2 days later, I'd need to water again because of the sandy-based soil just allowed water to drain right through. And here in Arizona, to plant something this time of year, you need, well, to provide a whole lot of shade and maybe some air conditioning and a swimming pool of water daily, no less. In some respects, as the Church of the Palms are planters. We are to plant God's love and grace wherever, whenever we go. Or to put it in biblical terms of our passage in Matthew, we're to be sowers of the seed, knowing when and what and where to plant. Unlike gardening, which is often based on the harvest, how many green beans did you get? What was the size of your tomatoes? How many zucchinis did you get? Unlike gardening, our job is not to worry about the harvest, but to focus on planting, hoping and trusting God to finish what we start. In terms of sowing the seeds of God, we are to plant, not worry about the harvest, which may mean we spend years and years sowing seed, but hardly ever get to be there for the harvest. Much of that sowing, much of that good that we do, we'll never see. We cast our words of kindness, extravagant welcome out there, and they bounce off in the walls of this church, and then there's silence. If the words do take root in a life, bear fruit in someone's experience, move someone to a new place of existence, well, usually we don't know. Sometimes it takes years for a word to germinate in the soil of the soul, to take root, to make harvest. Good preachers, like good teachers, like good churches, must be content to sowing the seed and leaving the harvest to someone else. Now, if Jesus was anything in this parable of the sower, he was realistic. He knew that much is wasted. Nature requires more seed to be produced than can possibly germinate and come to maturity. When you consider the vast number of, well, animal species and the many colors of flowers and all the different kinds of birds that are feeding outside my backyard, it's easy to be amazed at the variety in nature and the sheer numbers, the gushing extravagance of the way the world is put together. Sure, with all these colors and varieties and species, there is extravagance, there is beauty. But to some, extravagance is just a word for waste. There is much waste in nature and in love. Most of our best efforts, most of our loving acts are extravagant. They're unnoticed. unheralded by others, bear no immediate results. When you take a little extra time for a customer to make sure she gets, well, what she needs and wants, the manager doesn't rush over right away and make you employee of the year. When my son Nathan was young and I would stay after Little League practice and help all the kids improve their hitting, nobody did a heartwarming TV special for me on 60 Minutes. When we intentionally turn the TV off and instead write a word of cheer to a friend who has a problem, we don't have a committee banging on our door to nominate us a citizen of the year. Much of our best efforts are extravagant and they fall on deaf ears. I just think back on all the teachers who made Herculean efforts to corral me and focus my energies, not knowing how or if the harvest would ever turn out. Nevertheless, they sowed the seeds of love and grace faithfully. I think back on all the Sunday school teachers, the youth leaders, the ministers, the church members who made that effort to sow God's love to me, never knowing the end result. As workers in the church, some of you know and can relate, I'm sure. We sow and sow and sow God's love, not knowing if the seed will germinate. We're going to sow and sow and sow God's love, and some of the seed is going to fall on deaf ears. We're going to sow and sow and sow God's love, and some of the seed is going to be trampled on by all the other competing forces that society throws at people. In church work, you sow and you sow and you sow, and rarely do you get to see seeds germinate and grow to harvest. So why do we do it? Why do we make such an effort to sow? Because it's our calling. It's our divine calling from God to sow the seeds of God's love. If not us, then who? Because, well, I can tell you with absolute certainty that the weeds and the thorns society throws at people are choking them. There are many people who are just barely on the edge of survival. And if we want to sow God's seed and we want that to take root in folks' life, we have to go to extravagant means of sowing the seed of God's love. Not so much concerned with the harvest, nevertheless, extravagant in the means of sowing. Let me tell you a story of a woman. Well, she taught Sunday school for many, many years in her church. She was a pillar of the Sunday school, and one day she received a letter. The letter was written to the woman, but it was sent to the church's address. It was written to her in care of the church. It was from a young man who had just entered hospice. He wrote, "You probably don't remember me, but I visited your Sunday school class when I stayed with my grandparents during the summer of 1978. You were very kind to me. Because of your encouragement, I actually started going to church back home. And my faith has been very important to me now that I've been diagnosed with cancer. I just wanted to tell you thanks." Now, that's a great story for a church's ministry. There was only one problem. She didn't remember the kid. The name brought back no memories. She asked others. No one remembered him. The church couldn't, 20 years later, connect him with anyone in the church. Then she searched through her 1978 diary and came across a strange notation she wrote on a Sunday evening in the middle of the summer of that year. It read, "We had a visitor in class today. Boy, was he a handful. He couldn't sit still and was driving me nuts. I sat beside him, gave him some extra attention, don't know whether it did him any good." We never know when the seeds of love which we plant will grow. And the truth is, only a small percentage will will grow, but nevertheless, our job is to sow and to sow and to sow and to sow, even to people who will probably never cross through those doors again. We don't provide an extravagant welcome to increase membership here. We do it because God is calling us to do so. The problem many of us have is that, well, we focus all the seed on all the seed that's wasted in sowing, all the seed that failed to bear fruit, all the sermons which fell on deaf ears, all the church efforts which, well, showed no visible result, all the people who stayed home on Sunday rather than the ones who came. The parable of the sower speaks of seed that failed. Most of it is of seed that failed. Yet I ask you, is the parable of the sower a parable of failure or a parable of success? You could read it either way. It depends on what you're looking for. Unfortunately, sometimes we're better suited to see all the waste, the failure, the disappointments of seed that failed to take root and was too inept to rejoice in beauty of the seed that took root and bore rich harvest. Now, you know that if you've ever been to many church services. Sometimes a particular idea is offered, and it falls on rocky ground, doesn't take root. It's obvious to everyone. But as strange as it sounds, I'm actually okay with that. I am. I'm not interested so much if you learned a particular lesson, or you can quote a passage, or understand what the biblical Greek says. More important than any details of any particular lesson, all I want to communicate to people is three things. That God in Jesus Christ loves them. That the church, that's all of you, love and accept them. That the pastoral staff loves them. If that's all people get, there's a chance that seed will germinate. And finally, in preparing for today, I read a story about a reporter who was visiting a small community of Roman Catholic lay workers in Northern California, and they take in and care for babies who are dying, whose parents have abandoned them and have no hope of a long life. The reporter was talking with a woman who was holding a pathetically small baby girl that was obviously very ill and was going to die. And the reporter asked the caring shepherd about the baby. And the woman said her mother was a prostitute addicted to heroin. She didn't want the baby. The baby was born addicted to heroin. Many birth defects. The baby will probably die soon. Why do you do this? The puzzled reporter said. I mean, why do you bring her up here, make all this effort if she's going to die shortly? The woman immediately responded to the reporter, so she'll know life in all its fullness. And the reporter just couldn't handle that statement. And he just found that difficult to believe. And with a tone of cynicism in his voice, he said, how can this pitiful baby know life in all its fullness? The caring shepherd of the baby quietly but with bold intensity proclaimed, she'll know there are people in this world who love her. That's all anyone needs to know, isn't it? Everyone here needs to know that they are loved by God, loved by all of you, the church, and loved by their pastors. Those who choose to be on a journey of faith must choose to dream and choose to act and choose to be the channels of God's love, sowing here, sowing there, sowing everywhere with bold intensity, sowing God's love. 13 and a half years from now, when I have retired. Who's counting, but you know. 13.5 years from now, I have retired, and well, to be honest, many in this room have gone to God. Will one of the kids we sponsor to go to church camp be up here? Will it be one of our seminary scholarship recipients, like Jim and Jeff's daughter, Brittany, Wendy and my son, Michael, or maybe a member in discernment, like my friend and our liturgist today, Michael Curry? Now, someone's going to be sure to ask them, how did it all happen? And they're going to answer, like me, the love of God seen in the body of Christ, the church, transformed them, enabling them to bloom. Good church, be in love with the task of sowing. Indeed, be enthralled with the task of sowing the seeds of love and content to leave the harvest to someone else. Thanks be to God.